place to go. Have no place to go. Darling, have no place to go. Have no place to go. Goodbye, baby. Yes, I'm going. Yes, I'm going. Goodbye, baby. Yes, I'm going. Yes, I'm going.
I don't think I've ever heard this song. At least not this far. It's pretty good. 6:12. Hi, good morning. Happy Monday.
Howdy.
How you doing?
Great.
Good weekend?
Yeah, fabulous. Happy Monday to you.
What'd you do?
One of the things I did, I went to Oktoberfest.
Did you wear one of the German pants?
Lederhosen? No, Steve.
German pants. Sometimes they call it German pants. Did you wear the German pants?
I did not, but I'm impressed just how many people just have a pair at home.
Of Lederhosen?
Yeah.
I borrowed Dave's.
Oh, nice. Yeah,
they're a little big on him. But.
We share Lederhosen. Yeah.
I think that's very generous of both of you to share.
And odd.
Because there's a shortage on them.
There's a Lederhosen shortage?
Yes. So,
I have no idea.
Yeah, thank
is
you.
Is it worldwide or just us?
Just us.
Doc Mose to be on today. Ryan Nobles will be on from CNN. Dean will be on today. Paul Conrad from WGN Television will be on in the 9 o'clock hour. We like Paul. He hasn't been on in a while. So let's say he and I are fighting and we got over it. You probably heard about it. TMZ. So it was all the talk there. There's no fight, Dave. It's just hype.
I can't imagine you fighting with Paul.
It'd be hard. And then Kevin Martin is an agent. We'll talk about this Antonio Brown knucklehead who signed with the New England Patriots. Because, you know, they need more help.
Yeah, that was evident last night.
After beating the Steelers 33-3.
Yes.
At 6:14. Why don't we do it right now, Super Joe? Why don't we do what I like to call the top six at six?
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Don't get your kicks.
With the top six at six, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
It's Whiteout Gate. Antonio Brown signed by the New England Patriots. Was he, in fact, in conversation with them prior to leaving the Oakland Raiders? What did he say when he went home? If, in fact, he has one, when he told whoever he's currently dating, seeing, or married to that he gave up $27 million to stay with the Raiders, it was going to be his guaranteed money. The Raiders, of course, had a big issue with Antonio Brown's behavior, not only the fact that he wouldn't wear the official NFL helmet he was supposed to wear, but he supposedly threatened to kill the general manager, Mike Mayock.
That's really not a good way to go about improving your relations with your boss.
Honestly, I think about all the fights I've had.
You've never said that.
Like,
it wasn't
a joke? Like, in the heat of the moment?
It was in the heat of the moment.
But
he wasn't. Well, I don't think he intended to kill him, but, you know, saying you're going to kill your boss is probably not advisable. So
that shows up in your review, doesn't it?
It's going to go in your permanent file, Dave.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I guess it depends on the tone.
Like if you do it with a smile. I'm going to kill you. Brown signed a one-year contract with the Patriots, heavily laden with incentives and behavior clauses. My guess is he'll be good through Friday.
That's a fairly safe bet.
So, next. In an inexplicable conversation, Donald Trump, your president, said that he wanted to have the final meetings with the Taliban to clear up what our relationship would be with the government of Afghanistan and how long we would have troops in Afghanistan at Camp David. And on the week of 9/11, had to cancel that meeting because the Taliban kept killing people, including our own. There's no way to have it make sense. There's no way to not be offended by it. If you're not offended by it, I don't know what would offend you. The Taliban helped orchestrate and protect and hide Osama bin Laden, who orchestrated the killing of almost 3,000 people on 9/11. And by the way, the plans to go into Afghanistan were put together at Camp David because that's our Camp David. And the only time you've ever had a major peace negotiation there that in my memory is when Anwar Sadat and Menachem Begin were there with Jimmy Carter. By the way, they both ran countries. They were not a terrorist organization. They both ran countries, and as did President Carter. It's inexplicable. 9/11 is Wednesday, and the only assumption that's being made by people who seem to know anything about this is that the president wanted a victory lap sometime around 9/11 by announcing some sort of settlement to the Afghan war and taking credit for it. Steve, is there anything I'm missing there?
No, I just I'm scratching my head too. I don't know, you know, who would be behind the timing of something like this. I mean, 18 years ago it was 9/11, right? I don't understand. I don't understand anything about this anymore. I really don't.
The ultimate truth about Afghanistan, and you know, you can pick up the phone and call his buddy Putin, will probably end up being that we have to have a permanent presence there. Because there's no reason to believe that there's any stability in the Afghan government. The assumption has been that when we leave, the tribes that have been fighting with each other there for years will start fighting with each other again. And that even if the older members of the Afghan government and Taliban government decide to strike some sort of deal with us, the younger, more fundamentalist members will go out and start their own splinter organization. So if the idea is we're staying there not for the Afghan people, but to protect our future interests against a terrorist strike here, I don't know how you would ever come to a settlement, because I don't know why you would trust anybody in charge there, because nobody's in charge.
Right, and you can see pretty clearly over the last, not just the last couple of weeks, but the last months, that there's no one to trust there, that those attacks continue. I mean, it's still a violent place, and there's nobody running the show.
Maybe this will be enough for the Republican Party leaders to say something.
A couple have stepped up.
Yeah.
Congressman
so
Kinzinger maybe, stepped up.
Maybe this is finally the, not last straw, but...
Well, there's a lot of straws. As you know.
I know. Yes.
A bunch of straws. You know, the fundamental, the foundation of any government, I suppose you could say, is the ability to collect taxes and pay for services. There's no central tax collecting agency in Afghanistan. So if that tells you something about how the government is run. Next, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommends people get the flu shot before the end of October. We'll talk to Dr. Most about this coming up. CDC says the flu vaccine can be beneficial if it's administered as late as January. Dr. Most has taught us in the past. And we hope he'll come in again and shoot us up here.
I would hope so.
So is the idea here that we might have an early flu season? Is that the idea?
I guess, yeah. And it does take 2 weeks to take effect once you get the shot. So
yeah, we need him in here right away.
Does G have a problem with needles?
Oh, boy.
Do you have a needle issue?
Listen, everyone. I get my flu vaccine every year.
So you
calm
don't have
down.
No, the reason, the reason we're bringing it up is Andrea Darlis, who once sat in your chair, was needle phobic.
Oh, yes. Like would the sight of needles make her like lightheaded?
I don't know that it got that far. Well, but
your
she,
son has that too, right?
Yeah, he's got the actual diagnosed thing. So does Bill Leff.
Well, I used to work with. I had a colleague that would pass out. Like she would faint when she it would really freak her out.
Vesovagal syncope.
Oh wow!
I
spell
believe
that.
Wow! I couldn't if I wanted to.
It's big talk.
We finally got Andre to do it though.
Yeah,
she did.
But Andre would say things like she had a flight. And then try to book a flight.
Yeah.
Just to get out.
Oh, yeah. She had every excuse in the book.
Next. Cheating in college isn't new, but the internet now makes it possible on a global scale. Sleek websites with names like Ace My Homework and Essay Shark have sprung up to allow people in developing countries to bid and compete and complete American homework assignments for their own particular benefit. We don't know if there's anything called, say, LoriLaughlin.com, which will help you facilitate a bribe to get into school. Over the weekend, information leaked out, probably intentionally, that, what's her name, the other woman, the celebrity?
Felicity. Hoffman.
Felicity Huffman said that she came to realize that in her effort to be a good mom, that all she wanted to do was help, but she realizes in helping that she actually hurt her daughter, and her daughter really didn't know anything of it when she paid $15,000 for someone else to take her SAT.
At least she's a little remorseful, though. She is.
How did the daughter
Lori Loughlin
know? No. Like, did she show up and take the test, and then that test
don't
was...
know. Yeah,
because
it
wasn't
sense.
A remote room or something, some special room.
Yeah, somehow the guy in charge of all of it, who's going to go to jail for a lot longer than 30 days, had orchestrated with the SAT people to have a separate room where the super smart guy could go and take the test for these kids.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing about that is, if you're going to go to that level of cheating, why not just get the answers?
Good point.
No. Go to Essay Shark.
Would you really, I mean, even if you were okay with cheating, which I'm not, you're not, but...
Well, I'm not okay with my kids cheating. No, when I was in high school, right. I was perfectly fine with
it. Right. Well, but would you go to a website and trust
that
whoever you're buying this work from is it's right?
Don't you think the teachers know what's on that website and can figure it out?
Well, I don't know. I'm on the website now, and they have client testimonials, and all the clients are listed by numbers. Here's one. Let's see. Client 25689. You helped me a lot with referencing my master's thesis. My paper finally looked professional through your professional input.
So it sounds like it's a consultancy more than a cheating homework situation.
Well, Ace My Homework, that's the one I'm on, so that one sounds like it might be more of a help rather than do.
They're not exactly subtle names.
No.
Essay Shark and Ace My Homework.
I mean, you can hire consultants that help your kid do everything they need to do to get into the college that they dream of.
Well, there's consultants all the way through. My daughter had a consultant help with their master's.
Yeah. So.
But
I think there are apps that can actually, the teacher can put the essay or whatever into the app, and the app will see if it's anywhere else on the web.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Are those apps as well?
I did not know that.
And this one sounds more like the gig economy, like you actually hire somebody to do a fresh paper for you. The Essay Shark looks like that's what that is. So you tell them, okay, I have to write a book report about Mark Twain, and they write a brand new book report for you.
Speaking of the gig economy, nothing to do with what we're talking about, by the way, but my friend Jim Gaffigan, the comedian?
Yes.
Is in a new movie. Do we have Gaffigan booked, Viv? He's coming? Okay. Gaffigan's in a new movie where he plays a guy who's down on his luck and has lost everything and is driving an Uber-type situation.
Sounds familiar.
And gets more and more angry every day about his circumstances in his life, and then take some dramatic action. Supposedly, he's phenomenal.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so it's like a serious role.
Oh, yeah.
Whoa.
Like stalker crazy, over the edge, Michael Douglas falling down crazy.
Got it. Okay.
His new comedy special is on Amazon Prime. I watched it last weekend. It's very, very funny, especially when he talks about growing into the double XL shirt.
I did it. Next. Uber Technologies plans to start rolling out a new feature to Chicago area app users that shows public transit routes and arrival times in addition to its usual ride-sharing options. When you select transit, you'll be able to see CTA bus and train routes, metro services, and the cost of those modes. Uber rideshare competitor Lyft began displaying Chicago area public transit routes and schedules in its app in January. I don't use any of this. Does this sound appealing?
I've already noticed that Lyft did it already. I mean, if you're like looking for a rideshare at that point, you've already screwed up your timing and don't have time to take public transit.
I only have time for one more here. let's see. I don't know if I want to do this one. Yeah, I'll do this one, because this will aggravate you. A new report claims airlines could be considering weighing passengers before they board flights to better estimate how much fuel is needed and how efficiently that fuel will be used. That'll be popular.
Yeah. I just don't want that fuel, whatever usage, to be that close. Like,
fair.
It should be...
Yeah, that's fair.
I just want plenty of extra fuelage, no matter what.
And I think I speak for everybody when I say just air travel has become such a joy, hasn't it?
Oh, it's right. Remember the slogan from Peter Greenberg? The airlines all say it together. We're not happy till you're not happy.
Right.
The current process is an inexact science that bases weight estimates on gender. Males are counted as 189 pounds. Females as 154 pounds. Donald Trump is counted as 509 pounds. children are 77 pounds. Research shows this method results in more wasted fuel. Well, the amount of money you're charging to put bags in planes and for crackers and nuts and things, you think they could cover
it
for
seats? How do you waste fuel? Like, is it like filling up your car? Like, do you use it on the next trip? Like, do you dump fuel out?
You would think if the plane's idling for a long time.
That's what I always say. If you're like at a 7-Eleven, don't idle your plane.
Right.
No matter how cold it is outside, restart it when you come out.
There's one landing area at O'Hare where it feels like you're just on the ground for like 30, 40 minutes.
Well, you actually land in Tinley Park.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, you taxi from Tinley to the... it's a very big area.
Is it me or do those estimates sound a little low?
Oh, my God, yes.
I mean, like,
never
very
been fatter
low.
America?
Way
no
low.
Question.
189 pounds?
189 is a dude in shape.
So are they going to make you put your poundage on your ticket?
No, you're going to get weighed right there.
It's going to be like the Biggest Loser. God. You have to strip down to like your underwear and stand on this.
There's going
to
be a scale with a giant bell on it, and you're going to step on it, and then they'll ding the bell right after they announce your weight to the other passengers.
Wow. Flying a lot of charters, you have to give them your weight for the manifest.
Do they weigh you?
They don't weigh you. They take your word for it, but I've been on planes where... Has this ever happened where they've moved you to?
I know it does happen.
To a different part of the planet.
It's a balance thing.
Yeah,
I know it's happened. I've never seen it, but in particular, because I weigh 157 pounds, so I don't have to worry about it.
No, I just pop my Xanax and fall asleep. I don't.
I actually give that number 157 pounds, but then right after it, I write "to be continued." 6:27. Back with the news.
That's all today for the Top 6 at 6.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
Celebrate 25 years of Chicago Television's number one morning show. Watch a live two-hour special full of memorable moments on the WGN-TV Morning News 25th Anniversary Special, Tuesday night, September 17th at 7.
That's a week from tomorrow.
Correct.
Okay. Doc Most coming up here in just a second, right after the news, but does anybody, and I'll ask Doc about this, anybody got a fix for a stiff neck? You know, like when you sleep funny and you wake up with a sore neck and you can't turn one way?
Like a leave.
Are you doing the neck exercises?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Pull your head to the side and pull your arm out. See my hand? Can you see that? This is great radio.
Wait a minute. You put your hand on top of your head?
See? And pull it.
Towards the side that hurts, right?
Yes. Either one. Do both. And then extend your fingers as far as you can.
Oh, my God. His head popped off. Mary.
I'll be doing that during the news next.
Do
on
both
7.
Sides.
All right. I will. Thank you, Doctor. Next on 720 WGN.
Doctor.
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 And doctor. Well, we miss anyone?
He's Northwestern Medicine BP. Call Dr. Most right now. Dr. Most.
Dr. Kevin Most. My brother Mickey calls me every morning. First thing he said to me this morning, Doc, is I talked to Kevin last night.
He's a great guy. I enjoy talking to him.
All right, so Doc, I've got a stiff neck. I slept funny. It never sounds right saying I slept funny because there's nothing funny about
it. What makes it funny? Right.
And Mary Vandeveld got me pulling on my head in one direction or the other. Have you got anything more medical than that?
No, actually, Mary's very good at that because people that get something called torticollis or a muscle spasm in their neck, one of the ways that we treat it is by things called muscle energy techniques, where we have you push against a hand in the opposite direction, and that the body's not smart enough to keep all those muscles contracting, and it actually makes the other one relax. So hopefully Mary knows what she's doing.
Should I have my hand on the side that hurts or the other side?
Well, we do both ways, but the way you can't turn, so if you can't turn to the right, we'll say, right?
Yep.
So you put your hand on the left side and you push against that. So you're trying to push against the way that you can't go.
By the way, if you're streaming, watch this.
Yeah, and then when you stop, and you really have to trust the person if you're pushing against someone else's hand. And then you should be able to turn it probably an inch or two further. If you do that three or four times, you should be able to turn it about 4 or 5 inches further. Discomfort.
I'm looking at him, and I don't think he's doing it right. I offered to whack him in the knee so that he would forget all about the neck pain, but he didn't take
it. That works well, too. Yeah.
And what's the deal? It seems like everybody I know now has this shoulder-to-neck constant pain. Is it all because of the computers and everything else? It's constant. Everybody I know.
Yeah. It's carrying computer bags now. You know, you think, oh, they're getting lighter. They really aren't. Backpacks at this time of the year, as well as stress, to be honest with you. People are sitting at their computer screens for longer periods of time without getting and moving. Their body's in one position, and then they go and carry their briefcase home. So they wonder why they have neck pain.
Dr. Most, you and I have talked for many, many years about the relationship between the doctor and the patient, and I vividly remember when you were taking on management roles that you caused you to have less time with patients. That's one of the things you really missed.
I do.
So is that where we're headed? Where, you know, there's another memory that sticks out in my mind. My mother had surgery, and I remember the doctor who did the surgery was in the hospital, but we had to go into a room as a family and take a phone call from him to tell us how the surgery went. So is that where we're headed, the long distance stuff, the not face-to-face contact stuff anymore?
Absolutely. You know, in some parts of the country, that's important. You know, when you talked last week about you following the advice of your doctor, and my comment was, you know, that might be changing, because in some parts of the country, about 50%, maybe even closer to 60% of the counties in this country don't have a single psychiatrist, but yet have psychiatric needs. So the ability to use telehealth, whether it's through Skyping, whether it's through phone calls, but the big thing is going to be getting care to people who can't have the ability to get that care because of lack of resources.
So the telehealth, the telemedicine thing, I get, but is this also in some way to facilitate the doctor's day?
Yeah, in some ways it definitely is. Teleradiology is a perfect example. Instead of a radiologist driving to four different hospitals, why not send all the images to one hospital? The doctor is much more efficient now, and you can allow for experts to see it. Teleradiology is a perfect example. Teledermatology is a perfect example where, you know, I'm not the best expert in this form of skin cancer, but all I really need to do is have those images, and I can send them all the way down to MD Anderson in Texas and have a dermatopathologist look at those to say, oh, yeah, that is what this is. I've seen millions of these cases.
You know, Dave, you've been very diligent about taking care of your skin after a skin cancer scare. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't that make you nervous? I mean, do you need the contact or don't you?
I guess there is something reassuring about being in the room with the doctor and having he or she look at whatever the issue is and say, yeah, this is okay, or here's what we should do.
Suppose it's sending him a Polaroid.
Yeah, but I guess, Doc, I mean, if I was in a situation where I really I wanted to make sure I had the absolute best care and maybe I didn't have any other means available to me, I'd be okay with that.
Yeah. And Dave, I think we are. We're spoiled here in Chicago. We're spoiled in this area where you go, what do you mean? I can see a dermatologist next week, or I can see a neurologist, you know, today. We're very spoiled. There's many parts of this country that aren't. But you do lose that patient-physician relationship where you feel comfortable walking in the room and seeing Dr. Jones walk in that room because he knows you. He knows your family. He knows your history. You feel comfortable to talk to him. You feel comfortable asking him questions. Now, when it's over a computer screen or an iPad, it's like, wait, I don't know this guy. I don't trust him. I'm not sure who he is. And yet everyone's telling me he's the expert.
In a patient's records, do you have notes about whether or not they need more time? You know what I'm saying? Like in my record, would there be something that said Steve's a talker?
Very difficult, you know, patient.
He's going to need a few more minutes. Does
Lots
that go on?
Of hand-holding yeah. required.
Oh, absolutely.
Weeping and rocking.
There's many doctors who say, you know, when Steve Cochran is coming, it's not a 15-minute visit, it's a 30-minute visit. And they do that for two reasons. One, they know you, and they know that's going to happen, but it's also out of courtesy to the other patients. Because if they kept it on their normal schedule, now everybody gets pushed back. So if they can look and say, I know this individual is going to ask me a bunch of questions and bring in a bunch of things and ask me that, I don't want a 15-minute appointment with them, I want a 30-minute. So that the guy who's at the next appointment isn't sitting there going, why am I late? Why is the doctor disrespecting my time?
I totally get it if you're living in a remote part of the country where there isn't a specialist available to see you, but I still take pause in having someone tell me bad news over the computer or the iPad. I think that.
So you want people texting you that you're dying?
Yeah, that would be a little. I think that part is hard because then you have the ability to gauge body language and, you know, maybe the doc to give you a hug or something. I don't know.
Absolutely, G. This should be used for routine care, not for those discussions. Before you joined the show, G, I was down and we did a Facebook Live, and I brought a lot of equipment now that is going to be used for distal help or distal telehealth, you know, so that a layperson can actually do a routine exam on their child or on their loved one and send that information to the doctor. Those are the things that are going to make it more efficient for the patient as well as the doctor. Now, when you get to say, whoa, I don't like the way that that looks that you sent me, I want you to come in, and then you have that face-to-face discussion, because that's important to make sure that the individual understands everything and what is going to happen to them, and allows them the ability to ask a question, allows the ability to hold a hand in comfort. That's very important. We can never lose that.
How much can Alexa do? We'll talk about that coming up in a second. If Alexa can get to a point where they can check you for a hernia, is that a bad thing? Steve, turn your head and cough. It's Dr. Kevin Most. All right, Doc, so we're talking about telemedicine. We're talking about how the world of medicine and the relationship between doctors and patients is changing, at least on a face-to-face basis. What's Alexa going to do to me or for me?
Yeah, you know, Alexa's listening to us all the time. So Alexa can do a couple things, and we'll be taught more as we advance. But they've shown, the researchers have taught some Alexas how to listen for breathing patterns. So they'll listen, and they'll go, well, that is a breathing pattern we don't like. That's a breathing pattern, easy for you to say, that can be signs of a heart attack, or that is an asthma attack. So it can actually identify things and can actually potentially in the future call 911 for you.
The amount of sensitive listening that would have to go on is incredible. And you don't have to say, Alexa, like, Alexa, I'm having a heart attack?
Correct. Alexa's always listening to you. So you think about how far away you are sometimes when you say something to it. The microphones in there are amazing. So if you're standing next to it, you know, they are going to be able to listen to your breathing pattern. They're also going to be able to hear what you're saying as far as describing symptoms in a 911 call that will identify heart attacks faster.
You think Jeff Bezos is sitting around with some sort of CB monitor just clicking around the world listening to people laughing?
I mean, this is just the beginning. This is how robots take over the world. I'm just warning all of you.
Wow.
The other night, I couldn't find my phone, and I told my wife, I can't find my phone. Alexa then asks, would you like me to call your phone?
Whoa.
Wow.
I'm telling you. Creepy.
Yes.
Wow. All right, Doc, what about crowdsourcing?
Yeah, crowdsourcing is an interesting thing as well. You know, we talk about mainstream media and we think about Facebook and Instagram and things like that. But what we're looking at for crowdsourcing is saying, if we get a lot of people, it's a concept of big data. If we get a lot of people that can listen and discuss a case, isn't it better off than just a one-on-one discussion? So in medicine, we do have a couple of those groups. We have CrowdMed, we have CIRMO. Those are a couple where actually you bring difficult cases forward and you're linked up to a whole bunch of different doctors to discuss the case, to say, have you thought of this? Look at this. So if you're seeing a patient that you haven't seen before or seeing a condition you haven't seen before, now you have the wisdom of all these individuals. The part that's getting a little crazy, though, is when we're going into regular TV shows that are now thinking about doing this or are doing this.
Like Chasing the Cure?
Chasing the Cure and Diagnosis are two big ones. You know, what they do, the concept behind that is the producers say, if I can have 1 million people watch this show, 1, 2, 3 of those million somewhere are going to have the same condition, and your doctor may not know about it, and we're going to discuss the condition, we're going to educate people about the condition, but we're also going to use their wisdom and their knowledge and their history to help have a diagnosis for the individual who's on the show.
Well, we should start doing it that way every Monday morning.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, big day for Apple. They're going to release their iPhone 11 and, you know, other toys and gadgets and stuff. What's Apple Health?
Yeah, you know, Apple's pretty smart. You know, they've taken all these apps and they say, you know what, let's put these health-related apps out there. And what Apple Health is doing is saying, hey, I'm going to take all the data points that all these apps are collecting, and instead of having me, the consumer, have to go to each individual one, here's my blood pressure one, here's my weight one, here's my diet one, Apple Health says, you collect them in all your apps, we'll be the clearinghouse, and we'll put them all at one place. So you'll be able to go to one site and see everything about your health. Great news for the individual. The scary thing is now is what are they going to do with that information now that it's out there and it is all consolidated in one area.
And do you see any downside with that?
I personally don't. You know, I look at people's health, and I'm not the conspiracy guy saying, I mean, you're never going to be able to get health insurance. I'm more of, hey, let's make sure we can get the best health delivered to each individual as quickly, as easily as possible. And with Apple Health, patients now have some ownership. So now they're starting to say, okay, I'm going to track my cholesterol. I'm going to track what I weigh. I'm going to track my activity. Before, when you didn't do that and you put it on paper, it was nothing. Now people have ownership in their own health and are starting to do things to make themselves healthier, and I think it's good.
In the meantime, trust your doctor, kids, and be honest with them. You know, you can bring in all the information you want, but they're the ones that are educated. So get to your doctor and listen to them and do what they say. What do you want to say?
Yeah. Well, find a doctor you like, too.
I just had a quick question because I have a new doctor I'm going to see for the first time in 2 weeks.
Yep. You say a new doctor?
A new doctor. My physician retired. And so I have a new physician, and so I'm going to have my first physical with him in 2 weeks. What's the most important thing that I need to come out of there with or to bring to him?
And Dave, it's a question that's asked to me so many times. Hey, I need a new doctor. Who should I see? And you know, sometimes they just give you a doctor. But I usually ask people, okay, tell me what you want. Do you want a big group? Do you want a small group? Do you want an individual doctor? Are you one who wants to communicate frequently with them? You know, so for you going in there is saying, how comfortable do you feel? And I'm telling you, you'll know in the first 30 seconds how comfortable you're going to feel with somebody, with a really? Physician.
Especially
how well he communicates
nude.
With you and how he fulfills your needs. You know, do you expect to have your blood tests and your results back and communication with him? And he's going to be one who says, hey, if you don't hear from me, you know, everything's fine. You know, it's going to be what you want out of your doctor, and that's the most important thing.
Okay, thanks.
Dr. Kevin Most, available every Monday here because he's a swell guy like that. And, Doc, thanks for doing this as always, we'll talk to you later on.
You got it. Take care, you guys.
There you go. It's Dr. Kevin Most. We're coming back with the news in a moment from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN. Jim Gaffigan's here.
There was no mayonnaise in a squeeze thing.
No.
You know, back in the day, there wasn't the squeeze bottle. I was explaining that to my children at dinner. I was like, you could maybe squeeze mustard, but like the progress we've made.
As a society.
We're even squeezing out relish.
What? Now that's crazy.
We're squeezing out relish now. I mean, it is just, America is.
Well, you've said for a long time, your goal is to have all food products in a squeezable container.
That's my goal. I mean, yeah. I'm part astronaut, so that's why.
I can't wait for your Thanksgiving dinner, your squeezable Thanksgiving dinner.
Squeezable.
No mashed potatoes?
Well, the entire turkey. Jim Gaffigan. Yeah, funny dude. Later today, I'm going to be at Ross Cochran and find people at Let It Be Us golf outing.
Oh, is that today?
That's today. Check out letitbeus.org. Illinois continues to languish near the bottom in all categories related to foster children. Getting kids proper foster homes and fostering to adoption, and that's Let It Be Us's goal. That's their job.
So you really got to get your neck right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, for the auction, because I'll be emceeing it later.
I think you should just wear a giant neck brace. That might be nice.
That'd be worth two shots a side. Thanks, everybody. Came out to the Metropolis Theater in Arlington Heights on Saturday. Had a great time. And really nice folks. I spent some time talking to people in the lobby before they left, and just a fun crowd. I mean, I don't know, 300 people or so, and a lot of laughs.
And how was John DeCosta singing?
He did great.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What did he sing? Did he sing any
voice.
Of our good songs?
No, that's why I say when you come to these shows, you're getting stuff you wouldn't get on the air,
yeah.
Because he did specifically stuff for the show that night. He does his thing with the songs. You know, Tim Allen does the Michigan thing. Pure Michigan. Come to Michigan. We've got some lakes. Pure Michigan. He does a song for various states. You know, North Dakota song, South Dakota song, Wyoming song. Very funny Delaware song.
Wisconsin song. Why is Delaware extra funny?
I'm giving away a joke here, but he and his son Christopher do the music. And because Delaware is small, the entire song is Delaware. That's the whole song.
That's pretty cute.
So, anyway, it's funny. So, now, there was a wardrobe malfunction. So, I come dressed partially for the show.
Nip slip?
little side boob
Janet
action?
Janet Jackson?
Was tape involved?
Justin Timberlake?
No, it's worse than that. So, the dressing room is upstairs. So, I go upstairs to the dressing room, and all I'm doing is throwing on an Oxford in a sport coat. That's it.
Sassy.
Not hard. Thank you, Dave. And yes, it was. So I get distracted. I get distracted easily, I suppose. So, you know, I throw the shirt on and I do what a grown man would do. I tuck the shirt in and I belt up and throw the sport coat on and I come downstairs and I go out and do the set. Got a lot of laughs. I don't know, 45 minutes of material or so. And afterwards, I said, I went out in the lobby and I greeted people. And as I'm greeting people, the guy comes out and he leans in and he goes, Steve, your fly was open the whole time.
Oh, boy.
I was going to think, I didn't know you put pants on even, because you didn't talk about pants. So I go, did he go out without pants?
No, I'm not quite at the point where I'm wandering off in the woods. But he goes, but this is my favorite part. He goes, your fly was open. Come on, man.
It's hilarious.
So the barn door was open. Did we see animals or was it just the barn door open?
No.
Oh,
and that's the
Grzanich, gross. Oh. Grzanich. Oh, it's too early for that. It's not even 8 o'clock.
You don't know. Maybe my animals are nice.
Is that why the laughter was so immense?
No. As a matter of fact, nobody mentioned it to me other than this guy, but I immediately did the turn to the wall and check thing, and he wasn't wrong. Of course, I didn't even ask him. I said, shouldn't he have been focusing on the show, sir? So I don't know that it was that obvious. But I think there's a notion, especially amongst women, that every guy knows when his fly is open and he's just dopey or lazy or both. You don't. I mean, unless there is, a large breeze headed directly at that area, you don't notice.
The thing that is bothersome is that nobody noticed enough to tell you, like, during the set or...
Well, the other thing, too, is I went out in the crowd. Like, we had some leftover catering, and I brought food out to the people, and I handed out food to everybody.
I mean, do you accept a sandwich from a guy with his fly unzipped?
They did. Yeah.
I think a heckler, it would have been great if a heckler just
yelled out.
That's
what I was, your fly's out. Right. And then you could have made a joke out of it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
My issue with the fly being unzipped is sometimes, you know, you have that one pair of pants that fit great, but then it's just the zipper's weak, so mm-hmm. the zipper gets...
Yeah, that wasn't the case.
That wasn't the case.
No. Zipper
you
was just
well. You were in a hurry. You
zipper
were dressing.
Was perfectly
and you,
functional.
Yeah. It looked that way on Instagram. That's where I saw it.
So, based on what I'm hearing, this is what I think. I think there's probably only a few people noticed it. Because if everybody had noticed it, don't you think there would have been some reaction?
There would have been mass chaos. People would have been running to the lobby.
I think people would have told you.
I think also maybe you were just so engaging and funny that people didn't notice.
My eyes.
Yeah, well, also wearing a sport coat, you know, it's more of a distraction.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So
was it a plaid sport coat?
No. What is this, 1974?
I just wondered. I wondered if it was a busy design
navy blue with a gray shirt with black checks and jeans.
Drawn the eye upward. My pet peeve is when...
Well, I usually say that. I usually say, ladies, my eyes are up here, because I have to.
If you have something in your teeth, do you want someone to tell you?
Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah.
But then why is it so awkward to tell someone, though, that they have something in their teeth?
If your breath is bad, if you have something in your teeth, if you have something in your nose...
No, how can you tell someone that their breath is bad?
You go, hey, just so you know, you may want to grab a mint.
You do not.
Absolutely.
Okay, in theory, this is... But when do you really... It's awkward if you don't really know
the person. I say it to
people
whose breath is fine, just to make them uncomfortable.
See, that's just mean.
Steve, were you going commando, or did you have underpants on?
No, I was going...
Grzanich is obsessed with your crotch area.
No, listen, this is a grown man who recognized it. Steve is just following up as a newsman.
Right.
No, I was wearing what I always wear, Tommy Johns.
Okay.
All right. Exciting day Saturday. I got some new Tommy Johns. Oh boy, what a big weekend. Seems like a lot of the weekend revolved around my crotch.
I hope you wash them. I hope you wash them before you wear them. I've noticed there are a lot of men that just open up the package and they wear them straight from the package instead of washing them.
Yeah, I washed them. I beat them with a rock out at the river.
Did you get the variety pack, like with plaid? And
No, you know. Custom order.
Does it say Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday on them?
Nope. But I have almost turned over the entire underwear drawer to Tommy John. I'm almost Tommy John completely. Anyway, I want to apologize to anyone who saw that my fly was open. I wasn't aware. It wasn't a stunt. It wasn't a setup for a joke I forgot. I just forgot to zip up my fly. And I rarely do that, as far as you know. So I'm sorry. But everybody had a good time. Nobody complained except for the one guy. And again, I love when the guy goes, come on, man.
Get it together. Sheesh.
Next show, September 27th, Beverly Arts Center. And we're going to have a good time. We're going to do Southside Family Feud. Featuring Bridget Gaynor and some other Southsiders.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah. And some very funny stand-up comedy again. On the 27th. At the Beverly Arts Center. We'll tell you more about that as the week goes on.
I'm Mary Vandeveld from the IDOT Traffic Center.
Hey, Mary. Yes. Texter, my sister walked all over Walmart and nobody told her that her blouse was unbuttoned, showing a tremendous amount of mid-boob.
Oh.
I didn't know mid-boob was this thing.
Well, I only knew about side-boob.
I guess it's upper and lower and mid.
Yeah. Yeah, so she checked out. Nobody said a word about her button-down, half-undone mid-boob with her bra showing. Is that the female equivalent of the male fly being down? Is your blouse is unbuttoned?
Yeah, but
because personally, I gotta say, I'm for that.
Listen, you. I'm gonna ignore that
I
comment.
I think the women that have that problem are doing. I think they're doing it on purpose.
Okay.
Don't you?
Why?
Well, I don't know.
I just think that like we have to worry about the top and the bottom.
Yeah, but you can see if your top is unbuttoned, you can see it. You're doing it on purpose.
So, Steve, were you doing it on purpose?
No, I was not, and I'm here to testify to that under oath. 815, I was getting my teeth cleaned. Noticed as the hygienist was finishing up, my fly was down. Was just focused on your mouth.
Yeah, right.
And the guy also added, no animals were out. and also someone sent a picture of a chicken. I mean, you can figure, you can finish it. 725, what do we do now? Do we take the break? Right, we're taking a break, then we're coming back with the MVPP.
People, here's the thing. Can I have your attention, please, people?
Most famous.
Amazing.
Just great.
So great.
Awesome. You rock my world.
The Steve Cochran Show presents the most valuable person on the planet.
Everybody's heard of Big Brothers, Big Sisters. These are people that are kind enough to donate their time and make sure that somebody smaller than them has somebody they can talk to, look up to, hang out with. Imagine extending that out to somebody that's going through a real health scare in the battle of their life. Katie Abdallah did and created Battle Buddies. Katie, you are the most valuable person on the planet.
Thank you very much. I'm so glad to be here today.
Well, it's very nice of you. Now, you just graduated from Wake Forest High School. What are you going to do this fall?
I actually just moved out to Santa Monica, and I'm at community college out there right now.
Nice. Santa Monica. Wow. How'd you scam that? He went to mom and dad and said,
nice
listen,
weather.
It's not going to be easy for me, but I'd like to go somewhere where the weather's great every day.
You know, I decided to follow my brother.
Oh, good. Good, good, good. All right, so here's the deal. Katie enrolled in a business incubator class. The objective was to solve problems creatively, and you guys created Battle Buddies. What is it?
So Battle Buddies is a nonprofit organization that seeks to raise the spirits of pediatric cancer patients in Metro Chicago by pairing them with our local young adult volunteers who are usually high school students that meet with our patients on a biweekly basis. Our goal is to provide a break from the hardships that they really endure during their treatment and to just kind of give them a break and let them hang out and kick back with a buddy.
Yeah, so it's not about the sickness. It's about just being normal and having
exactly.
An older kid to hang around with and talk to and laugh with and whatever.
Exactly.
Well, what are the age groups that we're looking at here with the pediatric patients? And then I know you're saying
so
high
we
school.
We really serve patients between the ages of 2 to 12.
Wow.
That's
wow.
Great.
So, yeah, we've got quite the range.
You know, that's that key age when you just really look up to people that are in high school.
Yeah, you know? And you know, especially when you get to be, what, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12,
yeah.
And hanging out with somebody that's mm-hmm. 15, 16, 18, whatever.
It's a big deal.
It's a big deal. It's very nice of you to do it. Now, what do you need from the public? What's the best way to help you guys keep this thing going even while you're off at school?
So, honestly, we've had a lot of problem actually finding kids to help because going through the hospitals looking for patients have had a lot of privacy issues.
Oh.
So really just getting our name out there to be able to help more people.
All right. So we need the hospitals to recognize Battle Buddies as a legitimate deal, trying to help kids and figure out a way to sync those two up a little better.
Exactly.
And you're saying that even parents of pediatric cancer patients can also reach out directly to the organization
yes,
as well.
Yes, that's how we have been operating.
Got it. Okay. And then what are some of the activities that that the kids engage in?
It really ranges between coloring. Sometimes we read books. Just Dance is a favorite.
That's funny. And what about the older kids? More video games?
Board games, really.
Okay. Okay, so basically whatever. Just whatever the kid's into yeah. And hasn't had a chance to do.
Exactly.
Right.
It's well, really their time to do whatever they want.
What are you going to do with your education, Katie? What are you going to study?
I'm looking to go into business.
Okay.
But I'm not really sure which field yet. Probably accounting, actually.
Well, you're off to a fine start, and you are the most valuable person on the planet. Thanks for being on, Katie Abdallah. Isn't that a neat idea?
That's a great idea.
And I could see these kids come up with this idea from an incubator standpoint and, you know, going full thrust and then running into. And by the way, the HIPAA laws and things, the privacy laws, are perfectly appropriate, and they should
Absolutely,
be in place.
Yeah.
But they need to have somebody be the liaison mm-hmm. between them and the administrators of the hospital so they understand that this is something that's needed. And then maybe they can get more kids involved and you know, the kids that are going through cancer treatment can benefit.
Yeah, it's absolutely incredible. You just think about what happens when a kid is sick and the parents are working. Usually they're picking up extra work in order to pay for the kid. If there's not siblings around, or if there are, you've got to make sure that all the kids have attention. So this is a great way of making sure that a kid that's sick is getting a little extra TLC.
Without a doubt. 224, my son's a pediatric cancer patient at Lurie's. Thank you for doing this, because I don't know if you know, but September is Pediatric Cancer Awareness Month. I'm going to let our social worker know about this Battle Buddies program so she can refer patients.
That's fantastic.
There you go. 7:35. We need a break before the headlines next on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Ryan Noble, C-N-N. Good morning, buddy.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
What was the picture I saw from you and your wife? You were standing on a beach somewhere.
Yeah, well, I had a terrific weekend, Steve. My good friend Noah Gray and his now wife, Kristen Holmes, who's also a correspondent at CNN, Noah's mm-hmm. one of our producers. They had a beautiful, picturesque wedding on Nantucket. I'd never been to Nantucket before. Of course, there was a hurricane that we had to deal with. And it blew through the night before the wedding. They had plans to have it on the beach. We were a little nervous whether or not that was going to work out. It turned out to be absolutely gorgeous. The sun came out, the wind died down, and we had a fantastic weekend. It was really the first extended time away that my wife and I have had together without the kids. So my in-laws generously took the kids for the weekend, and we just had a fabulous time. And now this morning, I'm on a golf course, playing a charity golf course, an upstate tournament in upstate New York with my brother-in-law. So I really can't complain, Steve. Things are going pretty well for me right now.
I remember when you used to work.
Well, I'm headed to North Carolina tomorrow for the okay. special election there. So I still am on the clock, as always.
Speaking of elections, Trump is mockingly tweeting the fact that Mark Sanford, the former governor of South Carolina and former congressman, who got primaried in part by Trump's Twitterness, he's mocking the fact that Sanford had an affair. the lack of self-realization. I mean, Donald Trump has been married three times. He had multiple affairs with countless women. You think he'd shut the hell up?
Yeah, well, projection is one of President Trump's best attributes. He knows how to do that better than anybody. He can, push off his faults on other people as well. It is pretty remarkable that he would go down that road with Mark Sanford, given his own issues in his own background. But that's Donald Trump's MO. He does that all the time. He is not afraid to go down that road. That's exactly what he's doing in this case. And I think, you know, Mark Sanford, just like what we talked about last week, with Joe Wilson, or I guess it was more than a week ago. But he has the potential to be an irritant to Donald Trump, and that's exactly what he's being in this case.
Oh, you're talking about Joe Walsh. Yeah, Joe Walsh is well.
I agree.
And the Republican National Committee said this morning that they are inclined, if not directly headed for no primaries at all, no presidential primaries, and just all delegates will be turned over to Trump.
Right, which is not out of the ordinary. That happens pretty much when there's an incumbent president. They do go down that road. I guess the difference here is that you do have legitimate, well, I don't know if legitimate is the right word, but you have potential people that could cause problems to President Trump, and there's at least some desire within the party to see him challenged. So it isn't out of the ordinary. We shouldn't make too much of that, but you know, this is a symbol of how the Republican Party is coalescing around the president and how they're going to do everything they can to protect him in this primary process so he comes out as strong as possible in the general election.
Here's the thing. The Democrats scammed Bernie Sanders hard last time. I don't know that Bernie would have won, but I know that the fix was in and that Hillary Clinton was the chosen one for the Democrats in 2016. The Republicans watched that. They mocked that. They said they'd never do anything like that. Regardless of this being standard operating procedure to some extent, when you have two people, both known, who want to challenge him, I know it costs money for these states to hold primaries, but this is literally the fix is in two.
Well, and I also think it's a mistake. You know, I think that if you look back at the last couple of presidential elections, you know, I think we found that robust primaries lead to stronger candidates. This idea that you clear the field, and this is something that both Republicans and Democrats make the mistake about, this idea that you clear the field for someone and then they come out of the general, they come to the general election in a strong position and then go on to win is, I think, just a false strategy. You know, take a look at Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. You know, they had a very rigorous campaign. Barack Obama came out of that experience as an incredibly strong candidate. Take a look at what Donald Trump did last time around. He had to beat back a huge field of Republican candidates. He came out of that a much stronger candidate. And I think you're seeing that happening with the Democrats right now. You know, Joe Biden, if he ends up being the nominee, is being put through the ringer. And if he is able to come out of this experience as the Democratic nominee, a lot of these flaws that he had at that, you know, that he's dealt with up until this point are being exposed now as opposed to being exposed in the general election. And I think it ultimately makes him a stronger candidate. So, and I think that would happen with the president as well. I think there's an easy way for him to swipe aside this minor competition and come out of it stronger. But yet, you know, the political strategists in these situations always think more about these situations than they should. They almost overthink it to a certain extent. And I think you see that happening here as well.
I'm going to give G the last word here, and then we're going to let Ryan get to the golf course before he has to be called into work.
Ryan, do you think any fallout from this entire Taliban and Afghanistan meeting that was canceled, do you think any Republicans will maybe think twice about rallying around him?
Well, we always think that. It never happens. I mean, I think Republicans, you'll see very mild pushback on this. I actually saw, I wish I could remember who tweeted this because it was pretty funny, and I was hoping you guys would ask me about it. Someone said that they were happy yesterday on Twitter that that President Obama was able to kill Osama bin Laden because perhaps Donald Trump would have tried to find a way to become best friends with him. And I think that's, to a certain extent, what you see happening here. I mean, every time you think that, you know, he wouldn't open the door to some sort of crazy regime and try and draw, you know, some sort of grand diplomatic bargain, he surprises us again. It seems as though cooler heads have prevailed in this. You know, I think that the Taliban has a long history of not being able to be trusted in situations like this. Afghanistan continues to be a powder keg. What the president wants is he wants it both ways. He wants to be able to pull American troops out of Afghanistan and prevent that from continuing to be a hotbed for terrorism. That's easier said than done, and it doesn't appear like there's an exit strategy here for him that's going to allow him to accomplish both goals.
It's Monday, and we're just getting started. Play well today.
All right, guys. Thanks so much for having me. Have a good one.
That's Ryan Nobles from CNN. Time for Joe to do his Joe thing. Super Joe gives you a Monday socks question. And that Monday socks question means you win Sox tickets. Running out of game, Super Joe. This is for a family four-pack for the White Sox and the Indians Tuesday, September 24th at 7:10. Every Monday at 7:50 we do this. What's your question today?
All right, so the White Sox may not be atop the standings, but they have two players that sit atop two major statistical categories as we enter the last few weeks of the season.
Okay.
Tim Anderson's .334 batting average and Jose Abreu's 112 RBI are the numbers to beat in the American League.
Can we just re-sign Jose Abreu, by the way? What are they waiting for?
Yeah, that would be pretty sweet.
I just don't get what they're waiting for. The guy's done nothing but the right thing.
Probably after the season, they'll address it.
Okay.
So the Sox have had three players who have ended the season leading the AL in either batting average or runs batted in. Can you name one of them?
Batting average or runs batted in. Is it Shoeless Joe Jackson?
Shoeless Joe is not one of the three.
Almost seems like I guess that every week. 312-981-7200. First correct answer is a winner. Let's come back and get that after this on 720 WGN. Kevin is in Arlington Heights. What's the question again, Super Joe?
Three White Sox players have ended the season as either the AL batting champ or runs batted in champ. Can you name one of them?
And Kevin, the answer is not Shoeless Joe Jackson. Who do you think it is?
I'm going to go with Frank Thomas.
Ding, ding, ding!
Frank Thomas led the American League with a .347 batting average in 1997.
And wasn't he the stolen bases leader as well there?
Not, no, oh, he no. was not. Mm-mm.
It'd be funny if a guy the size of a building could steal a base.
I mean, can't you just say Frank Thomas for any of these answers? Mm-hmm. Like, that's what I've noticed lately. Well,
don't give it away.
Oh, sorry. Okay, never mind. Everyone, don't hear that.
A family four-pack of tickets to see the White Sox play the Indians Tuesday, September 24th, a couple of weeks from tomorrow. Tune in every Monday at 7:50 until the season's over. WhiteSox.com, 866-SOX-GAME. Who are you going to bring to the game?
I got my two twin boys coming with me, and maybe my dad will come with too.
Nice.
Oh, how old are they?
4 years old.
Oh,
the best. The
so
best.
So cute. Send us a picture.
Yeah, do that. Definitely.
I would love to.
All right, man. Thanks. Have fun.
Thank you.
Appreciate you listening. It's Kevin in Arlington Heights. Oh, speaking of Arlington Heights, I opened up a can of worms or a zipper full of worms when I was talking earlier about the wardrobe malfunction, Saturday night's Arlington Heights Metropolis show.
Your unzipped fly.
It was a great show, but unfortunately my fly was unzipped while I was on stage, and a lot of people now are chiming in. Steve Grzanich, are we talking elephants, lions, and tigers? Oh, my.
Mm-hmm.
Steve mentioned, were there any animals in the barn that I left open? 847. My dad says, good for you, Steve. It pays to advertise.
Now that's clever.
214. I'm a 55-year-old woman. I find a way to tell the gent when his fly is open. Not sure why I notice these things, except that I do improv street theater. And I tell people things like that all the time. We're talking to about, you know, you got bad breath, you got something in your eye, your nose, your teeth.
Ooh, the bat in the cave. That's always hard to tell someone.
847, Steve, I was at the show Saturday night. I'm a female sitting in the second row. Damn, I didn't notice your open fly. Said I would have paid more for that. You wouldn't have to.
Aww.
224, I was in the second row and didn't notice. 847, I noticed my fly was open when I was sitting in my car after I had just sat in a barber chair for 15 minutes with a female barber. Oh, yeah, like you didn't know. No, I know you didn't know. It's You don't know. Dave, your fly's down right now.
But I'm sitting here, so it's
he
like
has
fun.
Yoga pants on. He doesn't even have a zipper.
Yeah, that's pretty much all I wear.
And there's one more here I wanted to get to. Oh, you guys are having a real ball in the studio this morning. See what they did there?
Oh, I saw that.
Oh.
Yeah, yep.
That said one ball.
224, listen, I'm a licensed counselor and a nursing mother. I did an entire hour-long couples session, then discovered that my boob had popped out of my bra and I was actually leaking.
Oh, no.
Top that, she says.
Wow. There's breakfast conversation right there.
224, isn't that ironic? Oh, yeah, you know, I do this thing, or I did it Saturday night, and I occasionally do this piece of material, about how stupid it is when men send out pictures of their junk, and that women don't ever want to see that.
Oh, no, yes.
And how about the fact that I was talking about that on stage while my fly was open?
Meanwhile, little did you realize that you needed to heed your own advice.
815, no, it's not on purpose, Mary Vandeville. Big boobs are a problem, says this one. Top buttons remain button. Mm-hmm. Midway undoes itself.
I have several friends that are very well endowed, and they have back pain. It's a pain in multiple ways.
Yeah, I never had that problem. I apologize.
I guess the same argument could be used for men's trousers, right? I mean, no.
Not entirely.
No, Steve Grzanich.
779, we had an updated HR meeting because women were being rated on a number system by the men at work.
Yikes. Oh, well, that's definite. What? Oh,
the man from HR who did the meeting had his fly down the entire time, and he looked like Tony Orlando from the 70s.
Oh.
I feel like we're going to have an HR meeting later this morning.
There's a lot. Yeah, especially you, Grzanich.
Not
you're
me.
You're going to be the one.
Right now. Be quiet.
Yeah, you're the one that's going to be
out of this.
In trouble.
And then there's a reference to inchworms. That's not fun.
Oh.
And you don't know.
Oh, my goodness. I hope things have rectified themselves in this office that this person works in. That's terrible.
You almost act like me and my fly problem wasn't the main point of that whole deal.
Somebody just said, why is it called a fly anyway?
I know it's about you, but...
why is it called
a fly? That's a good question. What?
I think it says a zip fly. I think it has to do with the type of zipper.
Hey, good news. We're out of time. Check out the latest edition of the Everything Podcast. Go to WGNRadio.com, Cochran, and the WGN Radio app. Are we doing a new podcast today? I don't know if we have one scheduled, but we're going to get a couple more of those in this week.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah,
Channel 9, where in just a week, they'll be celebrating their 25th anniversary of the WGN Morning News. Dean right now is plugging a fork into an electrical socket.
Hey, hello.
I was wondering what was happening.
There's a lot of popping going on there. You okay?
Going on with the cord here. I don't know what the...
I thought, am I just hearing this? Is this only in my head?
I think he's jamming a fork into an electrical socket. Wall socket.
That's how he has all the energy that he
that's
does.
That's how you learn.
Weren't you in a band called Jamming a Fork in an Electrical Socket?
Yeah, and somebody said it was too long.
They had to shorten it because it wouldn't fit on the marquee.
Right.
In the
somebody
theater.
Said, hey, that's too long.
That was a comedy show this
Went
week.
Well, thank you, except for the fact my fly was down during the show. But
on purpose?
No, it was not on purpose, though I am thinking about working it into the act.
So, sassy.
We had a lot of laughs, good times, good times, and a great crowd.
What would you say was your best joke?
Can't tell you. They were all so good. No, I mean, I don't want to, you know, listen, I might do it again.
He has to give people incentive to come and buy tickets.
Right. What she said. And we're doing, Dean.
What would you say was your worst joke?
Good question.
That's a good question. It all seemed to work.
I mean, do you even have a bad joke anymore?
Sure, sure.
After
sure, my hair.
Have you seen him? Have you met? Gee, this is Steve. Steve, gee.
You know, I save most of the material that doesn't work for the show. For this show. Yeah.
I mean,
stuff on stage, I make sure it works. Yeah. Stuff here.
Well, you need an alter ego, Stepan, now.
Sure, because I speak so much fluent Czech.
Yes.
All right, so, Dean, how was your weekend?
It was very nice.
What'd you do? Anything?
Very, very nice.
Were you busy? Were you out there doing moron things?
I didn't really do moron things.
Oh, boy. A lot of people recognizing the moron entertainment Saturday night.
You were on the float.
Oh, I was on the... Yeah, I was in the Mexican Independence Day float yesterday.
Well, you've been a long time Mexican.
Yeah. Right. El Morano.
Yeah, you know, there were several people after the show who said, where's the other moron? It was like they were all together. Where's the other moron? I said, we don't travel together. I said, it's Saturday night. Who knows where the other moron is?
That would just be too much moron power in one place.
That's exactly right.
It would create a break in the universe.
You know, since we're doing the Southside show at Beverly, at the Beverly Arts Center on the 27th, you should really be at that one.
That's my hood.
Yeah.
That's where I grew up.
Yeah, you should be there.
I grew up like two blocks away from there.
Notice how he's avoiding the commitment to be the
arts
center. Like how Steve always asks me these things on the air.
Right, because if I ask you off the air, you'll be able to, you know, fashion an excuse and some profanity.
When is it?
It's still September 27th.
I mean, I think Dean would only want like 40% of the cut of tickets.
Oh, he wants a door deal.
Yeah,
we could probably give him a door deal.
You have to pay him.
The 27th, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you probably check after this segment.
I'm going to have to check with my managers.
One of Kanye West services? Is that what you're going to be doing that night?
I'm going to be doing, I do a Friday night service.
Okay.
Did you go to Sunday service yesterday?
I did not. I was on the radio, but I watched it online.
Yeah.
It was they streamed it live at sundayservice.com if you ever want to watch it again. It's actually, it was, you know, very inspiring. I mean, people were texting in going, that doesn't sound like church to me. Well, it doesn't sound like the church that I grew up in either. You know, this Kanye West doesn't do Gregorian chant shows, which is what I grew up with. But for a lot of people, gospel music is very much a part of, you know.
And, yeah, absolutely.
And singing and, you know, raising the roof, as they say. It was actually kind of beautiful to see thousands and thousands and thousands of people who were inspired to come to a church service on a Sunday morning in the rain, stand out there, and praise the Lord. We have a little bit of it.
You got a clip?
We do.
I ain't here to argue about his facial features. We're here to turn atheists into believers. I'm just trying to say the way school needs teachers, the way Kathy needed reasons. That's the way we need Jesus. So here go my single dog, radio nieces. They think they can rap about anything except for Jesus. That means rap
for God. So you get a little taste of it there.
Yeah, and I like the fact that Kathy Lee needed Regis is right before Jesus.
You find a lot of words that rhyme with Jesus.
Come on. That's a good point.
Come on. In the past, and these Sunday services that he's done in other locations, huge name stars have shown up. Brad Pitt, Katy Perry, David Letterman went to one of these and said that while he's not especially a fan of the music, he was very inspired by the whole thing. Yesterday, the only celeb on site that was spotted was Chance the Rapper, who also performed. But he was, you know, he was a part of a big deal. And he and his wife, well, he didn't really have the baby. His wife had a new little baby girl. So
is that his first kid? Is he Chance the Daddy now?
He is Chance the Daddy second time. They've got a five-year-old daughter already. But a brand-new baby girl in the family. Very nice.
Kevin Hart update coming up. The Venice Film Festival's best movie, Toronto Film Festival debuts, 25th anniversary of the WGN Morning News.
This is going to be fun because we're celebrating, you know, we're playing a lot of old clips from the 25 years of the TV Morning News. But I thought it would be fun to go back and listen to the top five songs from 25 years ago this week.
I was a disc jockey then.
Yeah, me too.
And I mean, I played these songs. No, I only played. We were supposed to play eight songs an hour. I played four.
Imagine that, you being rebellious on the air.
Was this when you were paying thousands of dollars for your big brick cell phone?
Yep, absolutely. Mm. Yep. All right, so we'll come back with all of that. Yep. Dean and I will play dueling disc jockeys.
Hey,
it's 8:21 in the city, and we'll what's coming up at 8:30?
¿Dónde está el otro imbécil?
Be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor, Channel 9720.
Film Festival season. Venice Film Festival best movie.
One of the big film festivals in the world where they picked the Joaquin Phoenix movie Joker as the best film of the year for them.
You haven't seen it yet, right?
I have not. It premieres in Chicago beginning of October. I want to say October 2nd, I believe. So,
and it's the backstory on Joker.
It is the backstory on Joker, prequel to the Batman movies. Right.
The Toronto Film Festival?
Toronto Film Festival kicked off over the weekend, and they are world premiering many of the movies that will be up for consideration for Academy Awards.
Is that like 10 days now?
It is. Yeah, it's a huge...
I remember when that thing was an hour and a half long.
No, that's one of the big... It's the biggest film festival in North America, but this is where movies that are going to be up for the Oscars are first rolled out. For example, Daniel Craig and Chris Evans have a new movie called Knives Out that premiered over the weekend. Jamie Foxx and Michael B. Jordan have a new movie called Just Mercy. The Renee Zellweger, Judy Garland movie that's called Judy. I have seen that, and it's pretty great. That premiered over the weekend. Jennifer Lopez's stripper movie that's called Hustlers.
I did all of her stunts.
Made its premiere over the weekend as well.
Yeah, I hear she's great in it. Kevin Hart update.
Oh, I just want to tell you one more thing about Toronto. Tom Hanks, It's a Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. That also premiered at Toronto Film Festival over the weekend.
I wonder how tough it'll be to get beyond the fact that it's Tom Hanks.
People are saying that it takes about 5 minutes and then it's no big deal. Yeah, no big deal.
Okay.
Kevin Hart is walking. He's out of bed, getting around, said to be in excruciating pain. But
I have no idea how he lived through that. You saw the car, obviously.
I did. The car.
Car's crushed.
Near totaled, right. Near totaled. And flipped over into an embankment. He had four spinal fractures that had to be fused.
Wow.
And I can't even imagine how painful that must be. But
how's the driver?
Driver is okay. Driver turned out as okay.
Wow. 25th anniversary of WGN's Morning News of the Primetime Show, a week from tomorrow night.
Right.
This is basically a expense account scam that they run there at Channel 9 Morning News. They don't really know when the 25th anniversary is. Somebody's making this up.
We're told, we saw a film clip, Jackie Bang.
Who were the originals?
The original host, it was not Jackie Bang. Jackie came a few months afterwards. It was a guy named Dave Eckert.
Okay.
It was a very talented anchor named Sonia Gant.
Okay.
Paul Huttner was the weatherman. It was a two-hour show at the time.
I don't even know. I don't know those people.
From 7 to 9.
Did you know those people?
I knew them, kind of.
When did it turn into Robin? Not Robin.
Larry. Robin. Paul.
Ms. Taez. Why am I forgetting her first name?
Oh, Roseanne.
Roseanne Taez.
Roseanne might have been like maybe 5 years in, something like that.
And when did Larry come in?
For quite a while. Larry was one of the originals. Larry was a street reporter to start off.
He could never find another job.
He was not at the anchor desk. He was a street reporter and did Annabella Val's job around town. He would go to different places.
Oh, that's funny.
And report from there with his Boys to Men haircut.
And
that's the best part of this primetime show, seeing the old clips and everybody's funny hair and
sure.
clothes.
The group, such that it is now, has been together longer than any other group, right?
About 10 years, I think.
Yeah.
For the most part. For the
when did you join?
I joined the morning show in 2000.
Okay.
But I've been here at WGN since 1991. That's 1991, my first day, is when I recorded the Victory Auto Records commercial.
Ah, memories. And did you always have the corner of the newsroom?
No, that's been fairly recent.
Okay.
Yeah, I have my own real estate now.
All right, so 25 years ago this week, from one moron disc jockey to another, what were the top five songs?
Yeah, so we just thought it would be fun to go back and see what the songs were that people were listening to, the top songs 25 years ago this week. Here is the number five song.
Boys to Men. Friday night. Live.
This is actually the number one song, but we'll go in that kind of order.
That's fine.
So this is the number one song, Boys to Men.
Okay, what was two?
The number two song came from Lisa Loeb.
Oh, I remember Lisa Loeb. You say, I only hear what I want to. I don't listen hard. Don't pay attention to the distance. She's a cute, nerdy glasses girl.
Cute, nerdy glasses girl. Bonus question, what movie do we find this song?
It was the Ben Stiller movie. Wasn't it the Ben Stiller movie?
I think it was a Reality Bites.
Reality Bites
yeah.
is correct.
Isn't that the Ben Stiller movie?
Yeah. Reality Bites is correct.
Number three.
John Mellencamp.
At number three?
Wild Nights. Night.
Oh. And everything. Oh, yeah. As you're walking down the street.
This was before he got hypnotized by that wild Meg Ryan.
You know, John Mellencamp can't sing anymore, and he sort of sing talks in concerts. But, man, he used to do great shows. And he did a huge favor for me when I was working in Minneapolis at 101.3 KDWB.
Yeah, man.
We were on the second floor, I guess. And we did a thing called Friday Drive-Thru, where we opened the window in the studio and we run microphones down from the studio into the parking lot, because it had entrances on both sides, and cars could come and drive through. And we'd give them prizes, or we'd let them hang out. And we had a bunch of cool concerts there, including John Mellencamp playing for about 50 people.
Wow.
Whoa.
That's a big deal.
Yeah, it was cool.
How long would you say that chord was?
That chord had to be 75, 80 feet long, dude.
Wow.
Yeah. Number four. Can you feel the love tonight? Is this the Lion King?
I'm holding a candle up if anybody can see.
The original version of Can You Feel the Love Tonight.
The Lion King was 1994?
25 years ago this week.
Holy crap, I'm old.
That was my biggest conclusion of researching these five songs, and I was like, I can't believe these songs are 25 years old.
By the way, the former producer of this show, Vivian, just told me in my ears that she was 1 year old when that song came out.
Nobody wants to hear that. And here's the number five song, 25 years ago today. I swear
by the moon and the stars. All for one, and one for all. Do you swear? Yeah, apparently you swear.
All these songs are reminding me of school dances.
I'm telling you, honestly, the early 90s was really a period of great music for about 3 or 4 years.
Nice songs. I enjoyed this.
So,
back when I was in my boy band, back then, we used to sing this song.
Dini and the Greeks.
Flaming Cheese. We were called the Flaming Cheese.
I remember the I'll Make Love to You song. We actually had a meeting about whether or not it was too controversial to play.
Same, yeah. That was racy back then. I remember a huge, like, 2-hour meeting that we were in when the song, Madonna's song, Like a Virgin, came out.
Yeah, sure.
And it's like, we can't say Like a Virgin.
Well, the I'll Make Love to You thing literally is, we're going to have sex tonight.
Yeah, I will make love to you. Like you want me to.
Ah, the 90s. Seems like just moments ago, unless you're Vivian. She was one. I don't know if you heard.
Yeah. Pooping in her diapers back then. Remember those days? That was fun. Primetime special is September the 17th, week from tomorrow, 7 to 9 p.m. We're all going to be here.
And then are you guys coming back Wednesday to do the show?
Yes, and then we'll all be, I was going to say, watch the primetime show, but really watch the next morning when all of us will be very sleep-deprived and pretty loopy, I would imagine.
Yeah, it'd be really cool is if the Nexstar Corporation closes the deal on Tuesday.
Shuts the morning show down.
And, no, and then they see this nonsense on Tuesday night. All right, man, thank you.
Yep.
Back with the headlines next, 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Mama said there'll be days like this, there'll be days like this, Mama said.
847.
There'll be days like this. There'll be days.
Sony's come out. You know, today's a big tech day. The iPhone 11's coming out.
I knew there was something I needed to do.
Are you an iPhone?
I am, but I'm just kidding.
Am I the only Android on this show?
Yeah, you are.
How is Android the number one?
Such an outlier.
Android is far and away the number one cell phone company, or cell phone platform, I should say, in the world. Apple's not even close. But yet everybody on the show is Apple.
Well, I think because if you have a MacBook or, you know, if you, it's like they're all
also
connected.
Not number one.
It's just the cloud. I know you probably pay too much. I know you pay too much money just for the way it looks and the status of it.
Yeah.
I know that. But it's just like once you get started, you're hooked and then everything's connected and things are connected on the cloud.
We had a joke when Lauren, my daughter-in-law, was pregnant with Abigail, said, because everybody else in my family are, they're all iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, if Abigail asks you, we'd have a name for the baby at that point, but if Abigail asks you to get an iPhone, will you? And I said, yeah, of course.
You'll just have one separate iPhone just to communicate with Abigail Grace.
Yeah, well, it's one of my 12 burner phones.
But, what kind of operation are you running
I can't talk
on the side?
But I'm not mocking the fact that you iPhone people have a chance to drop another grand a day on a phone you don't need.
Listen, I'm not in line. I'm not in line standing. I wait several months, like half a year before I upgrade.
Well, I think it's pretty interesting, Steve, that you've just said that the Android's the most popular, but you just described the entire world around you that has iPhones.
Yeah, that's it. But it is statistically far and away the most popular platform. It's also owned by Google, which doesn't hurt.
I just wish they'd make it a little smaller again, because mine, it's just too big.
I do think that the Apple
fit it in my pocket
interface is friendlier to use. So
it's whatever you're used to.
Well, I mean,
I have iPads, and I use both.
Oh, see, now your iPad's not connected to your phone. See, I would find that annoying.
Well, I also have Surface Pro.
Okay, so you're just all over the place. Like, this makes sense to me because you always say how you're ADD.
Yeah, that's true.
So you probably...
But the phone has gotten to the point now. You know, Sandberg brought this up, and she's right. Because, you know, you're going, well, why would you spend $1,000 on a phone? Well, you're not buying computers anymore.
Oh, no.
And you're also, in most cases, you're not buying computers. You're not buying laptop computers. You're not buying desktops. Desktops almost never bought. Laptops less and less. And the pad business ain't what it used to be. I do almost everything on my phone.
Yeah, I binge watch Netflix on my iPhone.
With your 40, 50-inch TV 10 feet in front of you?
Yeah, I don't know how large. I think I have no idea what size my TV is. Yeah, but you know.
World's lost its mind.
Like, I think some guys take a lot of, like, pride in how large their television is.
Yeah, and Apple is getting ready to solve that, too, with Apple TV. Pretty soon, if you have Apple TV, you'll be able to just press a button on your iPhone and your iPad, and whatever you're watching will go onto your television.
Well, that's what it should be. I mean, it's too much of a hassle to stream.
But you see, Apple is now promoting a credit card, an Apple card that's on your phone.
You can also, for the hard copy of the card, you can get a wood case for, what is it, $50
or
something?
It's so dumb because you can't put it next to any of your like other credit cards because it'll wipe out. I don't know. It's
so the wood case is a necessary thing.
Yeah.
The reason I bring all this up is this is a very special day for the Sony company as well. Sony special 40th anniversary edition Walkman is going to be issued.
Yellow?
Do you remember what a big deal the Walkman was?
Yes.
It was unbelievable that you could actually go outside and have music connected to your giant headphones that you could put on while you were running and working out. Sony Walkman turns 40. And now, as Gizmodo reported first, they're releasing a new version of the original Walkman. It shares the same design as the 79 cassette player. Here's the problem. It doesn't play cassettes. Now, if you're old enough to remember the Walkman fondly, you still have cassettes. You got a box somewhere.
Tons of cassettes.
Right? Instead, the 16-gig device plays music through Wi-Fi and Android apps. The 3.6-inch strip of glass on the front isn't a window panel. It's actually a tiny touchscreen you can use to control your tunage.
Somewhat related, but vinyl for the first time ever outsold CDs since 1986. So vinyls have made a comeback. So,
well, you can't find CDs anywhere.
I know, but like everybody's into like vinyls, though. Everybody I know has a record player, and they're going to the store, flipping through like vinyls and buying vinyls, and then everyone's like, "Do you have this special edition of this song?" Blah blah blah, and it's, you know, it's a big deal.
I got probably 200 records either in my albums.
You probably have thousands of dollars of worth of vinyls.
Yeah, but you know what? I've had them in my basement, or my garage. I'm sure they're ruined by now.
I don't know. We should take a look. This could be a good.
How much did the original Walkman cost? Anybody remember?
Wow. I went through a
$50 bunch bucks?
Of
them.
No, it may have been more than $100.
Yeah,
maybe
I was thinking like $99 even.
$599 for the anniversary.
And it doesn't play cassettes?
It doesn't play cassettes.
Wow. That's ridiculous.
So it's really more like an iPod.
I think I still have a yellow one that plays cassettes at my house. I think that's what I had.
Steve. Yep. You know, the other thing is now, why would you do that? Because you also have to carry your phone.
By the way, good memory, Steve. $150 in 1979.
Was it 150?
No.
Oh, that was expensive.
I spent more than I remember.
I had to cut a lot of lawns to get that.
2016, so it was 3 years ago, Sony did a gold-plated Walkman MP3 player. Gold-plated. Mm-hmm. $3,680.
I think it's also popular because it's in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, because Chris Pratt's like walking around with a Walkman. And
I'm just telling you, there was a period of time where the Walkman was the coolest thing you could have.
Really?
Yeah, everybody, you know, working out at clubs. What are you doing? I get your Walkman. Meanwhile, I'm carrying around my 45-pound Motorola brick.
Now it's like you got to have your Beats headphones on and like walking downtown with your Beats headphones on, which I always worry about because then I think you're going to get run over.
It's amazing that more people aren't killed in the city of Chicago every day with their headphones on.
I only think about that.
Headphones on, looking at a screen, walking across the street.
It's only because I've almost been run over. Like, I almost was really run over because I wasn't paying attention. So now I do pay attention.
What were you saying, Stu?
I was just going to say the headphones on those Walkmans, too. It's you got one type of headphone, and if you didn't like it, tough.
Exactly.
Right. Remember the black ones that had, they were just the stiff ones that if they fit on your head, fine. If they didn't, fine.
Good friggin' luck.
I just remember the Sony Discman. That was cool.
Yeah, it wasn't as cool as Walkman.
Okay.
Yeah, the Discman was like a transition device.
All right. Yeah. Fine.
But man, if you go out and get your Apple phone 11, your iPhone 11 today, and your anniversary Sony Walkman, you are living large for $2,000.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Minute 49, here's what's coming up. Kevin Martin's a sports agent, going to talk about the Antonio Brown soap opera. Hard to argue with the fact that he's the best receiver in the game, and he now is part of the New England Patriots because, you know, they better get some help. They only won by 30 yesterday in their opener against what's perceived to be a good Pittsburgh Steelers team. I sort of feel bad for Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth because they've seen two terrible football games now in their first two games of the year.
But only one was really a blowout. The other night wasn't a blowout.
That terrible game, though.
It was not a very good game.
No. No. Paul Conrad's coming up as well, and Dr. Deborah Lipstadt, professor of fame for battling Holocaust denial in court. Pretty amazing woman. She'll be on. That's all before Bill and Wendy at 10, and your news is coming up next, and we'll join CLTV as well on 720 WGN.
Hello.
Yo, what's up, Coach?
What the hell's going on, man?
There's a villain all over the news, man.
Is Antonio all right?
He didn't behave like this before he started getting this money.
There's something wrong with AB.
Antonio Brown has been an absolute embarrassment.
Yeah, you're just the most misunderstood ever made in my entire life. You're my favorite guy. I've never seen that one. I don't know where you are in your life right now. All I know is you got a lot of things going. There's there's a lot of people that have an opinion about you. And whether it be good or bad, you're in the spotlight all the time. Let me ask you this. Do you want to be a Raider or not?
I've been trying to be a Raider since day one. I've been working my ass so hard as anyone. I don't know why it's a question of me being a Raider. Like, you guys want me to be a Raider.
Please stop that. Just play football. How hard is it, man? You're a great football player. Just play football.
Yeah, but I'm more than a football player, man. I'm a real person. It ain't about the football. I know how to do that. I shut you guys down in Delhi. This is my life. Ain't no more games.
You know what you probably don't want to do? You probably don't want to tape a phone call with your former employer or to-be and put it on the internet.
Or at the time, your present employer.
Right.
Right?
Right. But there's still probably legal action that Gruden could take if he wanted to take the time to do it. Anyway, it's a hot mess. And you know who has to deal with these hot messes, especially when it comes to professional athletes? Agents.
Mm-hmm.
Agents have to find a way to talk some sense into their client or make some sense of their client to new employers. So you got to wonder, what does this Patriots deal look like? You know, and of course, there's rumors now that the Patriots, not exactly alleged to be the most honest organization in sports, may have been cutting this deal with Antonio Brown.
What? Yeah, what are you saying, man. Steve?
Anyway, Kevin Martin is an agent with JCK Sports. And Kevin, I know you do mostly basketball, but basketball players are just as nuts as football players and everybody else.
Fair statement. Yes, it is. Yes. Personalities, yes.
All right. So when you have a guy that's this far off the road as Antonio Brown is, you know, whether he's sensitive, whether he's chemically imbalanced, whether he's whatever, there's such a self-sabotage thing that appears to be going on here. What do you do?
I mean, you got to pull out all the stops and you got to see what the risk is. And you really have to come up with a strategy to help this young man or help this man save himself from himself, if that makes sense. You know, a lot of guys go into this thing emotionally charged and they say things out of context that they might not necessarily mean at the moment or you know, long term, but you definitely want to help them, you know, see both sides or all three sides, because there's going to be the team side, there's going to be Antonio's side, and then there's going to be the truth, right?
Amen.
And and you got to help come to terms with what makes sense to move on.
By the way, Dave, we should probably establish the background here for people that aren't necessarily big football fans. Antonio Brown, phenomenal receiver for the Pittsburgh Steelers, playing for a coach named Mike Tomlin, who is arguably the best players coach in the game. Had a problem with Ben Roethlisberger, the quarterback, largely. Couldn't get along. Steelers finally said, we can't do this anymore. He's the best receiver in football, and they said, we can't have him on a team anymore. They let him go. Raiders pick him up. The Raiders basically give him the entire city of Oakland, and he doesn't want to show up because he doesn't have the helmet he wants to wear, and then he threatens to kill Mike Mayock, the general manager.
And he also said his feet were injured from the
cryogenic foot thing that he did while he was in France.
And you know how I even know about this? G even knows about this.
Yes.
Because of Hard Knocks on HBO.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
He was the storyline.
Hard Knocks. So anyway, that's the backstory.
Right. Definitely. So, Kevin, what do you counsel your clients as far as how they should use or not use social media?
Definitely, you know, we want to have our PR folks, or we want to have them engage them before any type of activity in social media world, because once it's out there, you can't get it back. I mean, you can come up with false claims or your account was hacked or whatever the case is, but you want to think rationally. And as an agent, if I know that something's going on, if there's some uncertainty around the contracts, surrounding you know, player behavior or anything of that nature, you want to get ahead of it, put the cart before the horse. And by doing so, you want to engage your clients and say, hey, listen, I know you don't think this is right or this might be wrong, but let's stay off of social media for a few days and let's strategize on how we come back from this thing.
It's got to be harder than ever to do that, because you've got a time where there's two levels of stardom. There's stardom for the job you do, and there's stardom for the social media life that you create and update. And when you've got somebody that's a bit of a loose cannon to begin with, that maybe needs to grow up a lot, that's got to keep you up at night.
Oh, it does. It does. I mean, for the paycheck that guy's getting, I'd scratch my head if I was his agent. Like, what the heck is going on here? You know, and I know his agent has dealt with some of this before, some prima donna antics from other players before him.
Well, the agent's a prima donna. It's Drew Rosenhaus.
Yeah, some agents do have that, yes. Yeah. But you definitely want to try to, again, I'll repeat it. My guys know this. I try to save them from hurting themselves.
Right.
As best you can. And if you go to social media, since it's so accessible and it's instantaneously out there, you want to, you know, communicate and converse and let them know the pearls of that platform if they choose to not take your advice and just go on a rant.
As an agent, can you work with their family members at times to kind of get a more insight into what's going on with the player?
I mean, good question, and yes, you can, but then you got to ask yourself, you know, you got to know the personnel. So are the family members just as bought in as the client? You know, are they, you know, prima donnas as well? Because you'll often get clients who have family members that, you know, they think their relative can do no wrong and that he got sent, right? And so they'll pamper him or pacify it or even encourage it.
Sure.
And but you definitely want to engage those family members that are that are wise and that understand, you know, the detriment of behavior like this on social media and in real life.
Now, I can't run a pass route like I used to, Dave, but and also Kevin, but you know, Antonio Brown can't do a talk show. I've been fired a lot, and some of the time, shockingly, it was even my fault. But I never failed to realize that the people that paid me gave me the access to what I wanted to do and the spoils that come with that. What is it about today's entitled athlete that doesn't see that they got to work somewhere and the people who write the checks have a right not to employ them?
Very good statement. I mean, you know, I scratch my head a lot about that on how an athlete doesn't understand the you know, just the privilege he's been given or she's been given to be on that platform, to be doing something that they proclaim they love, right? And they're getting paid hundreds of thousands to millions of dollars to do something they love. And, you know, it's a company thing. You know, it's a business at the end of the day, and you got to take care of your investment. You got to respect your employer. They have to respect you, and it's a two-way street, but you just can't, you know, go flip at the mouth, you know, on your employer and run to social media or run to other media outlets and, you know, scream that the house is on fire. You can't do it. It sets a bad precedent, and no one wins in that situation because, believe it or not, there will be more athletes and those owners who own these teams. Those teams will last a lot longer than the individual athlete.
Yeah, supposedly a bunch of Miami Dolphins players immediately has to be traded after they had the 59-10 loss to Baltimore yesterday because they see where it's going. But I just wonder, Kevin, at what point do you have a client? I don't know if you've ever been through anything comparable to the Antonio Brown thing. It's so kind of off the charts. He comes across in Hard Knocks, doesn't seem like a bad person. He's kind of charming at times.
Well, even what he said to Gruden in that taped phone call. No, man, I always wanted to be a Raider. Do you guys want me? The guy's a complete con man.
Right. At what point do you, in dealing with a client, say, you know, this just isn't worth it to me because you're just too far off the tracks?
Fortunately, I haven't had to deal with that a lot. And in my industry, most of the guys, we have a pretty transparent open lines of communication, and they're accountable at the end of the day. You know, guys like C.J. Williams, rookies like Chris Clemens, guys like Jamario Jones, who was with the Lakers last year and now is with Washington, D.C., these guys get it. You know, they understand the position they're in. And they're accountable, and they understand that life could be going a lot worse if, you know, if we didn't have these opportunities. So they respect the platform and the contracts they're given. However, I've been at that tipping point before with an athlete. I won't mention his name in the past, and it's just like you don't get it. You're able to take care of your family and do these things, but you choose not to communicate, or you choose to go off the grid, and you know, it's that that entitlement that you mentioned earlier, you know, guys are groomed since middle school playing for some of these high-end AAU clubs, being flown around on jets. So they don't think of this as, you know, a privilege. They look at it like, yeah, you owe me this, you know. So I blame some of the earlier pampering and the pacifying from different institutions. You know, they created those monsters.
He's a unique talent, there's no question, and he will probably get two or three more shots, but Belichick will throw him out like yesterday's newspaper if he doesn't show up for work on time, and if he shoots his mouth off again. I mean, Randy Moss learned it.
Yep, true story. I want to say this about I don't think there's a better organization he could have landed in, as far as God, you know, he's going to a championship caliber organization, a world class organization. Yep. Now, granted, they have their problems, right?
Right.
And, but I think that when a player with a lot of baggage like this goes to a championship caliber team, it almost seems like it gets quiet and they're walking straight and they do everything right for the most part. So. We'll see how this turns out. I'm still out on the fence about it.
Yeah, same right.
I think that he can land it in a better organization and get a guy.
Well, if he can't make it work in New England, it's not going to work.
It's not.
How do people follow you?
You can follow me on Twitter at AgentLife07 or on Instagram at JCK_Martin and as well as Facebook at JCK Sports Group.
Good luck with the biz, man.
Hey, thank you guys for your time.
See you later. Thank Paul you. Conrad coming up on CLTV in a moment with us as well. Stand by for that on 720 WGN.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
Let's connect with my friend Paul Conrad, who I haven't talked to in a very long time. Are we fighting?
No. Are we on?
Yeah, we're on right now.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Well, this place is a technical marvel. How are you, my dear love?
Yes, Poopsie, I am great. And you know, Jisoo Kyi, ex of Channel 7, she was nice enough to be suckered into taking the job here, so she's on the show every morning.
Ah, that is awesome.
Hi, Paul.
Hello, hello.
And you know, Dave, sure. Of course, you know, using this gravy train as long as he possibly
ride
can.
Ride it out, my man.
I learned from the best, Paul. You.
So, all right, now I know we only got a couple minutes here, but I miss having you on the show.
I miss it as well.
And, you know, I know this TV thing you're doing is just like a bridge to, you know.
Right.
Right. Well, just you got to pay the bills.
Yeah.
But people want to know what's going to happen in this anniversary show a week from now.
Yeah.
I mean, including you. You're one of the people that want to know.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I am. So here's what I know. And I will be very honest with you.
Okay.
I don't know if you're in the same situation I'm in, where the Tribune Company sends these like fake emails out that are like phishing scams. And if you accept it, then the IT department comes and yells at you and says, you can't keep falling for the phishing scam. So the Tribune sends these phishing scams out, right?
Mm-hmm.
So because I kept falling for them, I decided that I was going to block pretty much everybody within the company.
Oh, so you don't know anything.
So I don't get emails now at all from, it's the best career decision I've ever made. Because now I can say to them, listen, I'm trying to be a company man and
right.
do the company policy
right.
stuff. If you want to talk to me, you should come talk to me face to face or something, because I'm not falling for that.
So we probably know more than you.
I'm not in on the loop.
All right, so here's what you need to know. Next Tuesday night, you're doing a primetime special.
All right, hold on a second, because I think I have a baseball game that night. What time does it start? Do you know?
I think it's 7. I think it's 7 to 9.
Is it Channel 9?
It's on Channel 9. Yeah,
right,
so I want to make a note of
that. The 11th or the 17th?
Yeah, 17th.
Okay.
And
I got a soccer game also at 4 o'clock. Well, listen, I'm going to do what I can.
I don't like your chances of making it.
No. So I do know this. It's been 25 years since this morning show started.
And you've been on how long?
23 of those 25.
Wow.
Yeah.
And
look at me.
How different do you look now?
I think I look almost exactly the same.
Wow.
I got to say, I think you're sexier than ever.
I think so also. Yeah. I will say my ear hairs are a little grayer than they were. But beyond that, nothing. I don't see any differences.
Isn't it weird how the hair on your head or your beard can stay the same color, but your ear hair color changes?
It's the oddest thing.
Thank God. I know nothing about
that. Yeah, yeah.
So anyhow, we've got like, I think it's a 2-hour-long show.
Yeah.
And we are looking back at highlight clips.
All the crap you've done.
25 years compiled into 2 years. And I tell you what, we've been we've been running some of these clips, and I think you can relate with this, where at the time you were doing it, you're thinking, oh, this is pretty good, it's not bad, but then you get a little distance from it, and you're looking at it, and you go, holy crap, that was awful.
Right. How do I still have this job? Because I would have fired me.
Yeah.
Is there one moment that stand out for you that you always think of as the best moment?
No, I do have one where I've got a little bit of regret. I've been thinking about, like, one of my greater regrets was back, I don't know, this is 8-10 years ago, there was this Twizzler challenge, right, where you could have a, you had a Twizzler in your
and I'd have it on the other end?
Yes. And Wink Winkle, who I befriended here at the station, he was on the other end. And he was like, let's go all the way down to the...
lips on lips.
Nibble. And...
like a lady and the Tramp moment.
Yeah, but it was a Wink Winkle and a Paul Conrad moment.
Yeah, I picked the wrong partner on that one. And so I've been... Right.
Wasn't that the day Angelina Jolie was
in,
too?
Yeah, it was. That's the exact problem. And so I've been working through this with my therapist, and she just keeps saying to get it out. You got to feel it to heal it
and talk
about it, because there's some healing and being in community with it.
All right, so here's what I think you should do, because I know
take
you got to go.
Shame away, you know?
I know you got to go back on TV, but here's what I'd love for you to do.
Yeah.
This week, just do as much sort of espionage-type work you can on everybody else. And then maybe next Monday we regroup on this before Tuesday, and you come in and you tell the truth about everybody.
Okay, that sounds like a good deal. Hey, Steve, you'll also be proud of me.
I'm proud of you already.
Because in the middle of the 9 at 9, at like 9:10 or something, they said, hey, we're going to stretch this out until this other time. I'm like, no, I got to be on the Steve Cochran Show at 9:20. I said it on the air. I gave you a little hello.
Nice.
Because I know we typically screw each other over, and this was an opportunity.
No, you know the drill. I always promote you guys, and you're the only one that steps up for me.
Right. And so I thought, this is my window of opportunity, and I snuck it right
nicely
in.
Nicely done. Well, you, Dean, and Annabelle of all the others don't even know about it.
And it's because I love you.
I love you back.
And it's not just because of the physical relationship we have.
I'm glad that you two aren't fighting anymore.
It's a lot more. I've got a lot of affection.
And by the way, you should know, if you follow Paul specifically on Instagram, he's been taking trips with his kids that are really cool.
A good dad.
All right, buddy. I'll talk to you later.
All right, I love you.
Love you back. See you at the house.
I'll see you when I get home. I got the milk, by the way.
Okay.
It's in the car.
That's code. All right, so let's have Paul back next Monday. And Paul will promote the big Tuesday show that he's not going to be a part of.
You have so many bromances. Like, I'm beginning to realize just, like, how many,
it's a little disturbing, I'm going to be honest with you.
You really have a lot of men that you really, really...
It's funny. I used to have a lot of women that like me. Now it's mostly old guys. It's 9:33. We'll come back with the headlines next on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
9:44. The Steve Cochran Show continues, and we are very pleased to have in studio Dr. Deborah Lipstadt. You've probably heard the name before. Dr. Lipstadt has been fighting Holocaust denial and talking about anti-Semitism for a very long time. And I wish it was work you didn't have to do.
I do, too.
Yeah, but I'm glad you're doing it.
Thank you.
She is the featured speaker at the What You Do Matters 2019 Kay Lambert Chicago Luncheon. That's today. First chair of the Museum's Committee on Holocaust Denial and State-Sponsored Anti-Semitism at the U.S. Holocaust Memorial, and in residence at the Jack Joseph and Morton Mandel Center for Advanced Holocaust Studies during this coming academic year as the study of anti-Semitism continues in another book, Anti-Semitism Here and Now. How do you not walk around angry all the time?
You know, I'm a pretty optimistic person.
I hope.
I have a good sense of humor. And the truth of the matter is, as I study anti-Semitism, which can legitimately be called the oldest or the longest hatred, it's the longest, most enduring hatred, I look around the fact that we Jews are still here. We've existed 80 years ago, one out of every three of us on the face of the earth was murdered.
How about that?
And we're still here. So how can I not be optimistic? You know,
it's a great take on it. Yeah. Because the reason I ask the question is because we know this is not just white supremacy. This is not just bigoted groups. This is countries who took the spoils of World War II who are trying to keep things.
That's right. It's on the right. It's on the left. It's Islamist extremists. It's certain segments of mainstream Muslim communities, particularly in Europe, not all at all, but certain small segments. It's all around. It's all around. And it's governments. Certainly not in our country, but it's governments like in Hungary, where the head of the government engages in a concerted attack on, not on Jews in general, but using George Soros, the international financier.
Right.
Now, you can disagree with Soros. You can disagree with his financial things, political stances, etc. But the attack on him is an attack on him as Soros, the Jew.
Exactly.
And that's disturbing. But again, some people on the left focus on anti-Semitism on the right. They see Pittsburgh, they see San Diego, they see the attack on George Soros. Some people on the right focus on the left, BDS, the boycott, divest, sanction movements, some of the attacks on Israel, Jeremy Corbyn and the Labour Party in England, some of our own members of Congress in the United States. But they often fail to see it right next to them.
Well, you know, the blatancy of people who are out front, those people... Well, I pity them. They are easier to understand because they're out in front with their ignorance, with their biases, with their bigotry. The people that concern me are the people with the money that hide. They go to the cocktail parties. They go to the receptions. And their hatred is spelled out by the money they use to fund other groups. How much of that is prevalent?
I think it's very prevalent. Look, the extremists, the shooter, the murderer in Pittsburgh, the murderer in San Diego, even Dylan Roof in Mother Emanuel Church in Charleston.
Yeah.
Those extremists, they're easy to spot. It's the dinner party. In my book, Anti-Semitism Here and Now, and at the Holocaust Museum this year, I'm going to be looking at other forms of anti-Semites. One group I call in the book the dinner party anti-Semite, the person who would never think of doing anything violent, but who'll say, oh, we just hired a new young associate at our firm. He's Jewish, but he's very honest.
You know? He's one of the good ones.
Some of my best friends are Jews. Anybody, when I was a kid, I was with my father once in a store, and the guy said to my father, it was an Orthodox Jew, was wearing a hat, not a kippah, but he somehow knew my father was Jewish. He said, oh, Mr. Lipstadt, some of my best friends are Jews. We walked out of the store, I was maybe 10, 11. I said, isn't that nice, Daddy? And he said, when you hear someone boasting, some of my best friends are white Anglo-Saxon Protestants, then
it'll be a good thing.
You know, some of my best friends are blacks, Jews, gays. I'm friendly with the good ones.
Right.
Look at me, I'm so terrific, I'm friendly with that group. So it's those people, or it's the anti-Semitic enabler. Someone who may not be an anti-Semite at all.
Sure.
But they rouse up the anti-Semites. They make it okay on the right and on the left.
Why didn't the evil of Adolf Hitler and the Nazis stop this?
We thought... Now, one thing I've never been accused, I don't think I've been accused of, and I like to not think of myself as naive, but I really thought that after the Holocaust, I didn't think anti-Semitism had gone away. I wasn't that naive.
Mm-hmm.
But I did think that the open manifestations of anti-Semitism wouldn't be accepted. But I think people's capacity to hate, people's desire to find someone upon whom to blame the changes in their society. Who can I blame? So if you said to them...
Charlottesville. Jews will not replace us.
Right,
that type
exactly.
of nonsense.
Exactly. Yeah. So you look to blame. If you said blame the bicycle riders, you'd say to them, you're crazy.
Mm-hmm.
The bicycle riders? Why the bicycle riders? But if you say blame the Jews... The same way if you have an outbreak, I don't know, of crime in your neighborhood, and someone says, oh, it's these young African Americans, black kids, you know, oh, it makes sense, even though it may not be them at all, but, oh, that makes sense. You find the group that fits the stereotype.
And that's the scary thing, because then you stop thinking. You go, okay, there's the wall. I got what I wanted. I reinforced my own narrow views, and I'm not going to go any further. I want to get Gia and Dave in here, too.
Yeah, well, that's the easy out, right? Because then you can just blame someone else without really having to look at yourself or what's really happening or be a critical thinker. But what about the world today is creating the situation? Is it worse? It feels like the climate now all around the world is set up to where pockets of extremism and hatred and anti-Semitism is really growing.
Right. I don't know, G, if there's more anti-Semitism, but I do know that the anti-Semites feel emboldened, feel freer. Or someone who before might have been, and I don't like to say a little bit anti-Semitic, because I think anti-Semitism, prejudice in general, is like pregnancy. Either you are or you're not. You know? But they feel freer, that they can say these things, that they can do these things. You know, there was recently an incident in the D.C. public school, middle school, which in which a school where there was a Caucasian population of students and an African-American population, and the kids were playing football, and one of the white kids turned to the black kids and used the N-word. And then he said, and you can call me racist, but I don't care. He heard that from somewhere.
Sure.
He heard that at home.
Sure.
So it's out there, and anti-Semitism is the longest hatred. You know, there's a difference in talking about, you said, Steve, before you hit a wall, you stop thinking. The word prejudice, prejudge, don't confuse me with the facts I've made up my mind. So you know, you meet the stereotype in front of you when the person's still two blocks away. But the racist punches down. The racist looks at the person of color and says, oh, there, if they move into our neighborhoods or go to, kids go to our schools, they'll bring the schools down, they'll bring, there goes the neighborhood. The that's the racist expression of looking at the person of color. They're lesser than us. They're going to bring us down. The anti-Semite, who's usually the racist, just another aspect of the racist, looks at the Jew and sees, oh, they're smarter than us. They're more cunning. They're richer. They're
therefore
more powerful.
A greater threat.
They're it's the conspiracy. They're going to control, and that Jews will not replace us. Is that the Jews are controlling this black and brown? What it's they just, say is
it's
invasion.
Such a fantasy world of stupid,
of hatred, of hatred. But
well, hatred is stupid.
It's stupid, and it, we could laugh at it, but it can cause such damage.
Dave, last word.
Yeah. How widespread is Holocaust denial now, and how can anyone make a case that it didn't happen?
Well, you know, you're absolutely right. Look, the Holocaust has the dubious distinction of being the best documented genocide in the world.
Right.
For a denier to be right, who has to be wrong? All the survivors, all the bystanders, the people who lived in villages and towns near the death camps or near the shooting sites who saw what was going on and have given testimony, the thousands of historians who write on this in the United States and Canada and France and England and Israel and Japan, all over the world, would all have to either be in on the hoax or duped, and most of all, the perpetrators. In not one war crimes trial since the end of World War II has a perpetrator ever said it didn't happen. They said, I didn't do it, I was forced, I didn't have a chance, but not that it didn't happen. So denial is ridiculous. You have to ask, how can anybody believe? But denial at its heart, hardcore denial, it didn't happen kind of denial, is anti-Semitism. The Jews made this up. Why? In order to get money, reparations, money, there's the money element. In order to get a land, there's the power, cunning, even though Israel would have come into being in some form without the Holocaust. But that's that anti-Semitic template. Well, that isn't as widespread today as it was, I think, 20 years ago when I was forced into court to defend myself against the charges by a Holocaust denier. But what is widespread is softcore denial. Oh, why do we hear so much about the Holocaust? Mm-hmm. It's too much, enough already. Why are they always going on talking about it? Israel is like Nazis. Look, you can criticize Israel. There are lots of things Israel does that is wrong, just like any country does that are wrong, that are really sometimes very disturbing. But to talk about Nazis and you know, a genocide, that's just ludicrous.
Well, you know, the crazy thing is get over it.
Yes, get over
know,
it.
Get over it. You know, you lived it. You're not living it anymore.
Right, right.
Stop talking about it. Get over
it. And people say that in when you have living here in Chicago, still thousands of people who went through it.
Exactly.
And their children and their grandchildren.
And by the way, I would encourage you to make time to see the Holocaust Museum here in Skokie as well. It's a great adjunct to the National Museum.
Museum in Washington.
I know you got a million things to do today, but I thank you for your time here.
Thank
I hope you
for
can do
having
this again.
Me.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
Thanks to CLTV, as we thank them every day, and we're coming back tomorrow because this is where we work, at least for now. We don't know. Next air's coming in. No, we're fine.
What?
Dave got a look on his face like a, you know, a deer in headlights. Dave, I'm joking.
Okay. Thank you.
We're fine. Hi, Bill. Hi, Wendy.
Hello, Steve.
Morning.
How are you guys?
Excellent. Great.
Are you having a medical incident
Fantastic.
Right now?
Fantastic. Yes. How is that obvious?
Wow. And nice weekend, I hope?
Yes, it was fabulous.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any highlight in particular? Or you save
really
it for your own damn show.
I remember what I did.
Okay. What are you doing today?
The truth about vaping, Steve. I know you're a big proponent of vaping. But
I always have been, but
right.
Only nose vaping, where I shove it up my nose. That's the only way I'll do it. Yeah.
I have a tick bite update, too. I got bitten by a tick on Thursday.
You okay?
We'll see.
You got the limes?
Got to stay tuned.
Do you love when somebody puts the in front of any disease?
Yeah.
You got the arthritis?
Are you smoking the pot, as my mom would say?
All right, it comes to the show. Bill and Wendy, see ya.